Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Tremendous exercise for coaches anywhere is to really be clear on their values and beliefs, their own personal values and beliefs.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent and personal development. My name's Coach Yas and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the Coaches Network. My name is Coach Yas, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Ben. Ben, if you just let the listeners let know a bit about yourself that they don't already know.
Yeah, hi, guys. UEFA Masters in Sports Coaching and currently coaching in the Cat 2 Academy.
Brilliant. And today we're joined by a very special guest, Simon Jones. Simon is the head or coach developer at Chelsea Football Club. Simon, if you just want to just let the listeners a bit about yourself, you know, we'll get straight into it in terms of where you started your journey from. Obviously not a traditional football background, coming from a tennis background, do you mind just talking a bit about how you got into the coaching world and then how you eventually transitioned into the football side of things?
Sure, lads. Firstly, thanks for having me on your podcast and looking forward to it. I started my coaching journey. I was a full-time professional tennis player. My level was, I played at Wimbledon qualifying. So I was okay. You know, in football terms, it was probably Division Two non-league level. So I was doing well, but not really, you know, heading for the big lights as a player. And I started to do a little bit of coaching when I was playing, just to sort of finance my playing. But actually, I find I really enjoyed it. And I then spent several years in my early 20s doing something that didn't exist much in tennis at the time, which was a sort of a player coach. So I would play a little bit and coach a little bit, and actually found that I really, really enjoyed coaching and teaching people. And of course, with the medium of tennis and the high level that I got to, it enabled me to get a good little coaching business sorted out. So, I worked as a private coach for 10 years, and then I worked for the Federation, the Lawn Tennis Association. I worked for them in the high performance team for 30 years then. And I've got a wide range of experiences across all different sorts of coaching, developing coaches, running coach education programs, and working at the very highest level. So big, big experience in tennis. And then probably about 8 years ago, somebody that I'd worked with in the Premier League, he was working for the Premier League, was a person that I'd worked very closely with at the University of Bath, where I was based. And that was a chap called Jed Roddy. And Jed was the director of sport at Bath, where I worked. And he also then became the sort of head of football at the Premier League. And he asked if I might be involved, like to be involved in supporting some of the coaches in football on what's known as the ECAS program. And I thought this was a really interesting project for me to do. And I signed up and I was a mentor for some football coaches across various clubs. And then one thing led to another. I did a little bit more at a few clubs and a little bit more at a few clubs. And now I spend my time, having left the LTA, working for two people, really. The Premier League, where I mentor heads of coaching, and also for Chelsea, where I work as their coach developer. So it sort of blended in and it became more and less tennis. And that's how I got to where I am.
So just honestly, you know, just go back and looking back at your journey a little bit. It's like, in that, you know, you started obviously, you know, heavily in the tennis world, and you ended up transitioning into football via, you know, the work of the Premier League and whatnot. What would you say are the major things that coaches can transfer from, you know, and it will essentially, coaching is a massive concept in itself it's a, you know, it, some would argue it's almost a, it's a craft and it's an art in some ways. But coaching tennis is very different to coaching football. What would you say are, you know, some of the key things that you've brought with you in terms of skill set that have allowed you to kind of take that journey into football coaching and, I guess, be approached to even be part of the ECAS program as well?
Yes, well, it's a good question. But and as I got involved in football, what I discovered was that football and tennis are actually very similar sports in many ways. Obviously, yeah. They look different, and there's the fundamental difference between team and individual. But, you know, the sports are very similar. They're both traditional sports handed down from generations, ideas handed down. They're both game-orientated sports, winning mentality, tactics, the competitive frameworks, very, very prominent in coaching. And a lot of the coaches come from the same background. So a lot of coaches in football come from a playing background, and a lot of coaches in tennis come from a playing background. Tennis players tended to leave school slightly earlier and play. And you know, I found lots of similarities in football as well. So a lot of similarities. And if you were to sort of not know the sports and you were speaking to the coaches in the two different domains, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. So a lot of the issues were the same. The big thing, of course, is the difference between an individual sport and a team sport. And what I found in tennis is, you know, tennis coaches spend a lot of time working one-on-one with an individual player, doing a lot of skill development. And that's probably where they are strong. And when I went into football, I saw this group training environment with a high level of motivation and lots of good tactical work going on as well. And I sort of saw, you know, an area where football could have learned from tennis. And by the way, when I was doing both sports for you know, 5 or 6 years, I was also taking the stuff from the elements from football coaching and helping the tennis coaches learn from them. So tennis coaches were learning very much about the intensity with which football coaches were creating in the sessions. But I was, you know, sort of cross-wiring it. And the piece that I still bring to football, and which I hope is of added value, is the understanding of working with an individual and developing their skills, which we do, you know, by natural course in tennis.
Yeah, I just wanted to delve a bit deeper into that. So you've already touched on there were certain aspects of football that you found that could have been transferred to tennis coaching. In regards to the sort of individual development within tennis, what sort of practical aspects are we talking about that can be transferred into football?
Well, I think specifically when in tennis, when you're working with individual players, you're not working with them at the same time. You're working with a player and then you stop working and then you work with another player. So getting to know that player really intimately as a person and what makes them tick. In tennis, you have the opportunity to do that. So you have more time with them, basically. And as you go up the ladder, you get more and more time with them. So, for example, you know, when I was traveling on the tour, I would spend all day, every day with one player. So you get to know them intimately and you see how the more holistic things going on outside their sport affect the sport itself. So that would be one thing. I also think that the demands on one-to-one communication in tennis are quite higher because you're the only one. So, you know, we can learn in a team sport how to communicate with each individual differently. So that would be another example of the sort of things. But also the detail around skill development. When you're working with a tennis player, you'll work on one skill and you'll progress it with a lot of detail over a longer period of time. And of course, the challenges in a team sport is that coaches don't have that time because they're organizing the group and coordinating the training. So what I've tried to do is to find ways in football where a coach can spend more time working individually with a player during a session and following through and progressing the stages of skill development when they want to improve the player. So those are the sort of areas that I found different.
Just on that, you know, coming back to the first point you made a bit about, you know, really developing an intimate connection with the player and obviously being around. I mean, the reality is, it's not as going to be as practical as that when you're working in football, is it? I mean, and I think what we are starting to see, obviously, you know, with certain clubs and certain a bit more tailored around certain people. And I think the closest thing to what you've described there is almost that goalkeepers union with the goalkeeper coaches and the goalkeepers in that respect, where they do spend a lot of time together. So they're really, would you say, coaches who are maybe not in a position right now with relationships, but hoping to build a relationship, but they're not in a position when they say that because they're actually working in larger groups. How would you advise coaches to go about developing those deeper connections with those players, given those can?
Yeah, absolutely. And if I can, you know, just pick up on a couple of things that you said there. The one thing I noticed that the goalkeeping coaches work closer, that they're much closer to the way tennis coaches would work. Actually, I've noticed that a lot, but not only in the progression of skill development, but the relationships that they have with the player in between the sessions as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's an absolute great spot from you there. I think what, you know, just to touch on the period, we're in this lockdown period now and just coming out of it. One of the things that we found in the people that I work with is during lockdown, the coaches have got to know the players a lot better. They've got to know their family circumstances a lot better. They've got to know where they live, their interests. And certainly the coach is reporting back to me that this is something that they want to carry on and they see the benefits of it. So whilst I'm not saying it's anywhere near possible to do it in the way tennis does, because they're totally different like that, I do think that the coaches of the future will find ways to develop more relationships with players. They'll spend more time with them, understanding what their backgrounds are like and what they do outside the sport. And they'll start to see, once they start to see the relevance and the importance of this, I think that they'll be encouraged to find more ways to do it.
I just want to take you back a little bit there. You know, you've touched on your transition from tennis into football with being part of the Premier League initiative of the ECAS. For those that don't know, do you mind just giving us a bit of detail around what the ECAS programme actually is?
Okay, so a little bit of history. So about eight, nine years ago, the Premier League decided that they wanted to support coaches in English football Premier League academies, and they did several interventions. One, most listeners to this call will know what the ECCP is, which is an audit standard raising program implemented by the Premier League to go in line with the funding. But another element was the Elite Coach Apprenticeship Scheme, ECAS. I can remember at the start, each Premier League academy had to nominate a coach to go on the ECAS program, and it was a two-year program where they were residential workshops, but looking at things beyond the technical tactical elements of their education, more developing their leadership skills, their communication skills, perhaps some critical thinking skills, to give them a wider skill set to be better coaches. And part of the ECAS program was, as I say, they did residentials, I think six residentials over 2 years, but they also had what was known as a coaching cell, where in their coaching cell they had a master football coach from the club. They had a life skills mentor, which often was a sports psychologist, and then they had a coaching mentor, somebody from another sport with a lot of experience at a high level of coaching. And that was where I fitted into the picture as the coaching mentor on the coaching cells. And that's how I first got involved in it. So the ECAS program, 2 years, residentials, mentoring program. And then they finally graduated out of the program at the end of it.
Right, so you mentioned a very interesting point there about the coaching side. You know, just for the listeners, would you mind just going into a bit of detail about what that is and then maybe providing some advice, you know, guidance on what you think maybe coaches who are not in those environments where they've got access to a coaching cell, so to speak, could go about developing a similar sort of concept of, you know, networking with a group of coaches, or where they could find potential
I guess, avenue to support in forming that coaching cell?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like the coaching cell so much that, you know, now I've left tennis, I'm sort of working privately with the different clubs, as I said. I like the coaching cell so much that I've taken the methodology with me wherever I go. I think it's a fantastic concept. And basically what you've got is a situation where this is one of the things I've been really impressed in football with, is the ability of the willingness of coaches to want to learn. Compared to some other sports that I've worked with, football coaches really have a great thirst for learning. So the coaching cell works very well in football. And what you've got is you've got people coming with different disciplines. So as I mentioned earlier, maybe a sports psychologist, maybe a lead phase coach, maybe a coach developer. But it can be other people as well. It could be it might even be a trusted parent of the players that can give a different perspective. But a group of people that are there solely to support the coach that's in the middle of the cell, and to help that coach critically think about his coaching and come up with ideas where they may develop further. And it's not an easy thing to do on your own, to actually just come up with those things on your own. But once you've got a group of people around you that are committed to help you, then the conversations flow and lots of good learnings can come out of it. A large part for me about coaches, developing coaches, is to support them with their critical thinking. And to really, really get them to park. And I'm not going to say park egos here, because that's the wrong, that's not what I mean. But park their own insecurities, park their own biases, park their own thoughts, and try to open their mind up to other people's perspectives on things, and to critique them and to think about them. And, you know, why is that person saying that? If I tried that, would it be any difference? What other things could I have tried? And once you get that, once you get the coach to start to think like that, the opportunity for learning is immense. But it's not an easy thing to do on your own. You need trusted people. You need trusted people around you, and that's why I like the coaching cell concept a lot.
And you know, you talk a bit about, you know, parking egos, parking issues, and what do you feel are some practical steps that maybe some coaches could, I guess, to put themselves in that mindset? Because I think actually within coaching, specifically, more particularly in football, I'm not too sure whether, and I would like to believe that it probably is the same in other industries as well. There is an ego element attached to coaches. I think we all like to feel that we know what we're doing, we know what we're talking about. Some of us welcome criticism with open arms and constructive criticism in that respect. But some people are very stubborn and, I guess, very ignorant to anything else outside of their own thoughts. So what would you say is the practical steps that coaches could take to kind of overcome that and be able to park those insecurities, as you put it?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And it's, you know, it's not a simple thing that we're talking about here. It's quite a complex thing. And you know, that's why I was sort of hesitant on the word ego. I don't want to make the word ego sound like a negative thing. We all have to have egos, because that's our self-confidence and that's our belief in what we think. What I would encourage coaches to do, though, is to be really, really clear on their own beliefs and what they believe in, and really clear on them. Write them down, you know, constantly reflect on them and refer back to them. But then when you're safe and secure on that, then go and challenge them. Ask people to challenge them in the knowledge that you're safe and secure on them. So the best critical thinking coaches that I work with, they're always asking questions. They're always asking for feedback, but they're always very, very sort of strong on their own beliefs. So they're not railroaded by feedback. Sometimes you get some feedback and it completely changes one's ideas, and it, you know, loses your confidence in what you're doing and second guesses you and makes you confused. But the best coaches that I've worked with, the more critical thinkers, are the ones that are very clear on what they believe in, And then once they have that confidence, then they open their mind up to others. And, you know, I was like many others and guys that will be listening to this during the lockdown period, I've increased the amount of time I've listened to podcasts and to webinars and, you know, following many different people in sport and business. And one of the things I personally noticed is that I park my judgment of people's ideas less now, having listened to a more diverse group of people who sometimes I might have thought, well, what does anybody from the retail industry gonna, you know, how can I learn anything from the retail industry, or I don't like his accent, or so, you know, something like that. I've noticed in myself over the lockdown period that I've actually parked those judgments even more than I had done in the past, and that's really, really, really helped me, because it's opened my mind up.
Yeah, just in regards to the critical thinking aspect of it, like, how important do you feel coach developing the reflection skills play in that? Because it's kind of like a informal sort of practice that I perceive as in football coaching that is not encouraged enough in terms of like post-session reflections and the method of how to do it.
Yeah, so you're so right, Ben. Reflection skills are so critical to one's development. But what I've discovered and what I'm thinking is you can't just say reflect, because it's a skill in itself. So by developing one's critical thinking skills, you know, asking questions, parking biases, etc., what that enables you to do then is to reflect better. So 100%, you know, coach's ability to look at what they've done, try and focus on what they wanted to achieve. Did they really achieve it? What could they have done differently? If they had done something differently, what would have made them do it? How would they have known it was successful? What are you going to do next time to build on it? You know, those sort of frameworks of questioning are they're quite skillful to do it. Actually, you can't just do it; you need to practice it a lot. And but you know, reflection is massive. You know, one of the things I believe very much on as well is, we talk about reflection is after the event, but if you don't set out what you want to achieve before the event, it's difficult to hold yourself account to it in a way. So very often coaches, we go through the process, because they work so hard. They sometimes it's 7 days a week, lots and lots of hours. And you know, what happens is they don't have time to actually sit down and think about what they want to achieve to enable quality reflection after it. And, you know, I'll go back to my tennis life, where we used to earn our money by the hour. And we used to just do 8 hours a day coaching to try and get the money. So it was a real task to set out what you really want to achieve, and then a real task to do the reflections at the end.
You touched on something earlier about coaches in football in particular, from your observation, your experience, having that, you know, almost a heightened thirst for learning. Why do you think that is?
Do you know what I think? I mean, what I think is, I'm so impressed with how passionate football coaches are about the sport. It's amazed me how much they know about the sport and how passionate they are about every element of it and all the players and the tactics and the techniques. I have to say, I mean, I feel I'm becoming one of them as well, by the way. You know, it's a deep passion about the sport. So I think the curiosity to know more is actually embedded. And probably in football, you don't realise it because it's just the culture. But yeah, Stepping from the outside, I've noticed that a lot. And also, I think that another element that's on a slightly different purpose is that it's quite competitive, football coaching. You know, it's hard to, there's a lot of coaches out there. I mean, there's a lot of jobs and lots of activity, but there's a lot of coaches. And I think coaches know that to learn and to get better. you know, there's a lovely way of looking at it is the gap between where you are now and where you want to be is normally learning and education. That's how you fill that gap. Mm. And I sense that coaches in football get that. So that's what, you know, that's why I get the feel that they're very hungry for their own learning. Mm. And it's more about helping them do that as opposed to trying to persuade them to do it. It's helping them do that and understand ways in which they can do it. Like the conversation I just had with Ben on reflection.
Hmm. Definitely. And just, you know, going more into your role, I mean, we've had conversations in the past and, you know, your role is, you know, coach developer, but I think in conversation with the past, you've actually referred to yourself as more of a talent developer. Just talk a bit about that and, you know, what your, you know, your thought process is and your perspective is on that aspect of things.
Yeah, I think I mean, I would refer to myself as a talent developer, but I would also refer to coaches in a, you know, Cat 1, Cat 2, Cat 3 academies as talent developers. And the reason for this is that, you know, I know at the start. So if I can backtrack a little bit. So at the start, I know you were talking to me about bridging the gap between you know, high performance coaching and more developmental coaching. When I was a tennis coach in a club, you coach all comers. Mm-hmm. So I was literally working with four housewives. And then the next hour, I'd be working with a top 100 player. So that's back in the day. That's how you worked. So you saw the big difference between coaching developmental people and actually high performers. You could see the difference. You could also see where there were similarities. By the way, there was a lot of similarities. But the big difference is that when you're in a high performance environment as a coach, you are coaching players that have a future in the sport. In theory, they have a future and you have a responsibility to them to make their future in the sport the best it possibly can be. So you don't have a responsibility to teach them the sport. You have a responsibility to further their future. So when I talk about talent development, you know, football coaching in an academy environment, for example, is just the medium by which you develop that talent. And if you were to, you know, make a silly comparison here, but if you could improve somebody's prospects by getting them to spin plates, then you get them to spin plates. You do whatever it takes to develop that talent, and you look at them on a highly individual basis. Some players like to play more than others. Some players respond to a more robust type of communication than others. Some players read the game differently to others. And looking at talent on an individual basis and looking at it holistically is what I would call talent development as opposed to just pure coaching. Mm. There's a lot more than, you know, the lovely expression that we have, the X and the O's. There's a lot more than that. To developing talent. And we've touched on it in this conversation, actually, you know, the way you get to know players more and look at them on an individual basis. But it's, you know, talent is also potential, being the ability to spot potential versus current performance. It's to see something in a player, to be able to manipulate their program a little bit to get the best out of them, to challenge them to the edge of their competency, which sometimes can be uncomfortable, but it needs to be done. And other times it shouldn't be done. And all of that I put in the category of talent development as opposed to coaching. I hope that makes sense. I mean,
Yeah, definitely.
Perhaps it's a bit abstract in my mind, but it's different, you know?
Yeah, like that was well explained. I just wanted to ask a question in regards to developing coaches. So like there's this like buzzword that has been going around this past couple years now amongst football coaches in terms of philosophy, and a lot of the time sometimes people kind of mix up like playing philosophies and coaching philosophies. In regards to like coaches that may, as an individual, have you know, like slightly different philosophies than what the club had, like as like administered. What sort of advice would you have for them in terms of developing themselves in a place where it's not like completely aligned with them? And I think that's like a reality that, you know, a lot of coaches will face. You're never going to be in a club that is absolutely going to be in line with everything that you think. So like,
unless you're the chairman.
Yeah, unless you're the chairman. So like, what sort of advice would you give for coaches in terms of developing their coaching skills in such environments like that?
Yeah, what a cracking question that is. First and foremost, a tremendous exercise for coaches anywhere is to really be clear on their values and beliefs, their own personal values and beliefs. And like we were talking about, you know, reflecting earlier and critical thinking before, unless you really know what you believe in, you've got, that's the starting point. And you know, one coach, for example, when I worked with this head of coaching, tremendously experienced guy, and he said to me, he really believes that adults get in the way of young people learning. And you know, it's a clear belief with him, and his whole practice and the way he worked demonstrated that. And because he had the clarity of that belief, it enabled him to operate in a way where he was really effective. So I think it's important to think about very clearly what your beliefs and your values are. Now, that doesn't mean that when you then go into a club environment and they have different beliefs and values, that doesn't mean that you're like a rebel. Because in any environment, you're talking about football coaching here, but in any environment, when you work for a business, when you work, you know, elsewhere, you have to work within that environment and the rules, the regulations, the processes, the values and the beliefs of the organization. That's what you're signing up to, and you have to and you have to do it. And if it's a real compromise to your own values and beliefs, then you make the choice to leave that environment. But I don't think it's ever as extreme as that. What I like the idea of, and certainly in the environments that at the time I have the privilege to work in, is we don't believe in strict, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do the other. We believe in some real strong values and principles. But we also believe that coaches aren't robots, and that great coaching enables the coach to express himself and to be innovative and creative. And that's where great learning for players comes from. So I'm not a great fan of curriculums that say on a Monday you do this, on a Tuesday you do this, on a Wednesday you do this. But we do need some structure and framework to work with and to, which is the organisational values and beliefs. But within it, a coach should be able to express their own beliefs. But if they don't know what they are in the first place, then they're not going to get anywhere. So it's kind of, you know, it's a long-winded answer to your question. And whether you call them, you know, philosophies or values and beliefs, I mean, there'll be more words for them coming in the future. But fundamentally, yeah, what do you believe in? And I encourage you lads to look at yourself in the mirror and say, what do you really believe in? You know, what do you really believe in? When I was a younger coach, somebody asked me that question, and I came up with it after a while, and it stayed with me forever. And you know, I know exactly what I believe in, what my philosophy or beliefs might be.
Go on, yes. Okay.
You know, I was just thinking, just on that, I think what is very interesting in contrast is, you can have your beliefs and, you know, like as you said, your beliefs are stuck with you, but there's nothing wrong with actually over time changing those beliefs because of certain things that you've had exposure to, is it?
Oh, of course.
For a lot of coaches, I think, find it a bit difficult. Say, no, this is what I believe in, and stay very headstrong on that.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But I think the appreciation that there is no one way to do this. If a coach in any sport, in any environment, feels that there's only one way to do this, then I think they probably have the doors shut on something there. Because even if they are tremendously successful, then the next generation of players are different kids. Hmm. So I don't think there is one way to do it. And as you say, it should change over time because Generation Z are different to Generation Y, different to Generation X. We know that, you know, the economical society, all of those things are changing drastically in front of our noses. And, you know, COVID is going to create another one for us. So there's no one way to do it, but it all depends upon the context. But you have to know why. You know, when you're doing something, you have to know why.
I agree that it's like it's sort of like an evolve or extinct sort of thing, because if you don't, then you will get left behind, like especially in this game that we play that constantly changes in a series of years. In regards to those, we've already like discussed certain aspects that you help coaches with, and is key for coaches to develop. Well, what sort of things do you do, or how do you play a part in developing it when a coach is struggling with that particular aspect? So, like a coach that may, in their past experiences, are just like literally followed whatever the above has said and taken it as gospel and not really been reflecting and just gone through the motions. Like, how do you challenge coaches like that?
It's sort of in danger of giving you saying the same thing and repeating myself, but you know, it's important for the coach to know their own beliefs and values. And if the coach is very comfortable with following, you know, a direction from above, and they believe in it and they can develop it, then that's great. You know, the fact that institutions have strong beliefs and values themselves is not an evil. It's in normal culture.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
It's a good guidance, and it provides a good framework. If a coach is sort of, you know, struggling with it, it could be for many different reasons. And I think what I would encourage the coach to do is to just sit back, reflect, understand their own beliefs and values, and then try and apply them. It's not a one answer to this question, because every situation might be slightly different. But I would say, in summary, that it's you know, if an institution has a set of beliefs and values, it's not an evil. They could be actually add to your own ones, and you can learn a lot from them. I tend to think that and I'm thinking quite broadly across sport now, is when, from a technical tactical perspective, I prefer sort of looser principles, so allowing for more coach innovation and creativity. But in terms of behaviors and personal values, I'm not so loose. You know, I think a culture, the culture of an organization, in other words, the way things are done on a day-to-day basis, I think if you don't fit that culture, you don't belong. Whereas if you have a slightly different variety and you want to innovate around the technique and the tactics and talent development, I think it's slightly different.
And, you know, just wanted just to delve a bit deeper into your, I guess, your role. You know, you're working with a few different environments at the moment. Do you ever find it challenging in terms of you having your own personal philosophy and, I guess, some of the things that you've spoken about there, and that maybe not being congruent with the, I guess, the environment that you've been placed in or that you're working with? Or do you actively seek environments? And I know you touched slightly on this earlier, but actively seek environments that will be, I guess, welcoming your thought process with open arms.
Yeah, I mean, one tends to end up in environments that you're comfortable with anyway. So there's a natural evolution there. I would say the most challenging thing for me is, you know, I'm quite passionate about coaching and development of coaches and in turn, the improvement of players. And I suppose the most challenging thing for me is not that I disagree with coaches. It's that I try to impart my own ideas on them too easily. And I suppose that's my, you know, that's my personal challenge is, I'm there to try and develop them and help them develop their own ideas. And if their own ideas are different to me, then that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. That's absolutely, if somebody's very strong on an idea that's exactly the opposite to mine and it works, then I'm absolutely delighted. My personal challenge is to not implement my own thinking upon them too early.
Yeah. I think it's definitely something that I'm probably dealing with myself in terms of a similar challenge, you know, certainly in my role as a coach as well. Working with different coaches, and you know, naturally, people ask you that and kind of want to come at it from your perspective. But I think it's very important, and I'm sure you'll agree that people are willing to look at it from your perspective, but they're the ones you have to carry it out.
Absolutely. So
it's about understanding what does the context look like for them and what does that mean to them in that respect.
Yeah, the worst thing that could happen for me is if a coach copied what I did because I told them it. You know, that doesn't flatter me at all. It doesn't. That's to be the worst thing. I think I was totally ineffective if that happened. Whereas if they took something, an idea that I'd given them, and they tried it out and they tested it and they ripped it apart and put it back together, and then they thought it was quite good, then I think that was quite a good thing.
Definitely. And just on that, then, in terms of obviously supporting coaches in that manner, what would you say is, would you say you're quite direct enough, straight to the point, you know, with your honesty about what your observations are, or sometimes the coach on the other end feel a bit more comfortable with that?
Yeah, and what I would say is I try to, and I hope that I can adapt my approach to each individual that I work with. And some players like some coaches like it to be more direct at times, and others don't. You know, again, there's no one way to do it. But what I would also say is it's also not only the individual specific, but it's context specific. So sometimes a coach might like you to facilitate their own thinking, but in another context, that same coach might like you to be more direct with them. And you know, I think the key to it is that all coach development should be individualized, personalized, and in context. So if you look at those different things, then it all depends on the situation. And when I go wrong and the mistakes I make is when I get that wrong.
Yeah.
When I get it right, I hope I'm making, improving the coach's ability to coach the players better.
Mm.
Definitely. And just on that again, obviously working in the pro game, as people put it, there's obviously going to be people like yourself and they're going to have access to other coaches like that. What would your advice be to coaches or people running organisations, possibly in the grassroots community, around maybe how to really foster that environment of that personal development, that conscious development? Because obviously a lot of coaches, everyone's outcome goal is different in the sense that some people set up an organisation because they want to create an environment for players to develop. Some other people set up organisations because maybe it's purely a business for them. Would you mind just sharing what you feel are maybe some of the key, things that they can probably implement and maybe the benefits of those things in terms of actually developing and fostering that environment as one for coach development, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I'll try and answer the question and be of some benefit here. I think one of the things that gets mistaken in sport is we compare the top of the game with the development side of the game.
Definitely.
And in reality, professional sport is the entertainment business. You know, it's that we're putting high-end people making a lot of money. And the coaches, the coaches working within it are still doing the same sort of job, but at the top end, it's the entertainment business and it's about winning and it's about results. Whereas, even at the developmental side of the fence, and I would include academy football in developmental side of the fence, by the way, mm-hmm. It is more development goals. This question of development versus winning, what I would encourage people to do is to think about the fact that winning is part of development. So very often results, it's not the match itself, it's the consequences of the matches that is the big thing.
Mm.
So if you set up an environment where there are consequences that affect development, then you're not going to be successful. So I'll give you an example. If you have 18 young boys in a squad and you pick your best 11 to play every time because you want to win, the consequences are 7 boys don't get playing time. Whereas if you put the 18 boys out and you equally distribute their minutes, but you still try and win,
yeah,
then it's a totally different result. Now, of course, that's just, your listeners will think, well, that's a very crude, silly example. But I'm just trying to make the point. Winning, preparing to win, dealing with failure, the ups and downs of it, the joy of success, which motivates people, losing, which spurs people on to be better. All of those things are part of development, not only in the sport, but in life generally for the kids.
Yeah.
It's the consequences that are the problems.
On that then, just something that's kind of really sprung out to me as you're talking through that, and I think it's worth noting. Football can be really useful in terms of as a platform to actually use, or rather it can be used as a platform where you can really bring together some transferable experiences. So I touched on there things like, getting success or dealing with failure, dealing with setbacks, whether that be lack of motivation. I think it's as you're talking there, just really stand up. We're more conscious about how some of our life experiences can really transfer into the football context. And it doesn't have to be that the experience is the same, but it could be that, after we have setback life, it might be, we didn't get a job offer, or we didn't get a grade that we were looking for in school, or whatever that might be. It's how do we overcome that? And I think looking at it on a more holistic level, a simplistic level as well, in that we take some of those concepts and apply them within our day-to-day of coaching and develop ourselves as coaches, but also lend that experience to develop our players. I think something that you've said there for me is that it is about overall development, and winning is part of that. And I think a lot of coaches do go down this route of thinking it's one or the other.
Yes. I'm pretty opinionated about that. It's not one or the other. I often use the expression, well, more in tennis actually, that losing is a really good thing. Losing gives you lots of lessons that you learn. Losing inspires you to be better and sets you goals. Winning is a really good thing. It teaches you to have humility in victory. You know, so all of these things that competition brings are fantastic life lessons. And I would absolutely encourage coaches to look at their coaching from that perspective first, because you will get better sports people from it. Football, I mean, I've been completely blown away by the level of responsibility that football has in society. And I think it's, you know, before I came into it, I knew it was a big sport and had its tentacles in society a lot. But since I've been involved in it more, it is incredible the impact that football has on society and young boys. And I'm delighted to say young girls now actually starting to come into football. It's a tremendous sport for that. And I would encourage coaches to understand that winning and losing is part of development. It's the consequences of winning and losing you've got to look at, not the competition itself.
And just in terms of like your previous and current roles, what are some of the things that you have learned about leading and managing others?
That's a good question. Your questions are thought provoking. There's so many different contexts of leadership, Ben. I mean, I led a department with 60 people in it at one time. If you were to ask me then what was important, it was clarity of vision, alignment of everybody behind the purpose, and actually not being too easy on my people. So, you know, because the reason I've ended up in a people development, there's a reason I've ended up in a people development role is because I want to support people. My style as a leader was a coaching style. But what I found was when you led a team such as big as that, you sometimes needed to put a little bit more pressure on them, a bit more positive tension to get them to perform. But that's a totally different leadership context to something else and something else. I think one of the things I reflected on, in my leadership journey was I led best when I didn't wait for permission. If I had an idea and I wanted to go with it, I went ahead and went with it. Whereas when I was in a different position and I was perhaps a little bit more hesitant and I was waiting for permission, then I wasn't as effective as a leader. One thing.
Why did you find to be quite effective for you?
I just think that as a leader, if you're hesitant, your people don't have as much confidence in you. I led big departments through lots of organizational change, which is very, very difficult. If people have been in it, many listening to this will have probably been in organizational change. It's quite difficult. And if the leader is hesitant, then it's not very helpful. Whereas if there's a real clear direction and confidence from the leader, then that helps leading people. Leadership's a long, long, long discussion. But I think those would be some of the things that spring to my mind.
We'll save for part two. And just in terms of your journey, you've obviously in your current role being quite like a big influence on some of the coaches within Chelsea's academy and in the Premier League ECAS program. But like for you, who has been like a major influence in your journey, and like what is the biggest lesson that you've learned from them?
Well, I think a very influential person in my journey was my original coach. In fact, my original coaches, they had a tremendous impact upon me. And I glimpsed to my right of my bookshelf to see a book on there that's probably almost 45 years old, that one of my coaches gave to me. And, you know, I had two key coaches in my teens. They were both very, very different. And the way in which they coached me shaped the way I thought for the rest of my life. Mm. And again, younger coaches, don't underestimate the massive impact you have on the lives of the people that you coach. One of the tough things in coaching is you don't get that feedback every now and again. It's funny you should ask this. This is an absolute true story. I had a message on LinkedIn yesterday from a guy who's now 39 years of age, and he's a national coach in Canada. And he was talking about all of the influence I had on him when he was in his early teens yesterday, actually. Oh. And it's very rare you get that feedback as coaches, but you are a massive influence on the young people's and their way they think about their lives, much, much more than you realize. So my early coaches were very, very influential for me. One was a very pragmatic type of coach, didn't like any messing around, was very, you know, straight to the point. And another one was extremely into what we now would now know as positive psychology. So, you know, I believe that they both gave me something that lasted all my life. And of late, I found people that, that can challenge my thinking. I've got a certain friend who works in business and he challenges my thinking. And these days we would call them mentors. But he's just a friend that I can speak to about where I am and he challenges me. And I would encourage people to do that. You know, I would encourage people to find people that they can talk to and they can challenge them in this mentoring role, and be open-minded enough to take the criticism. I think one of the things I'm thinking quite a lot about coaches is not only how to help them giving feedback to players, but also how to receive feedback themselves. It's quite an important skill, I think. And again, it's in the critical thinking area.
Definitely. Just on that, then, you know, what would you say is the biggest bugbear when it comes to coaching, then?
My biggest bugbear.
Yeah.
This is the only way to do it type approach. And coaches that are there for coaches, not for players. You know, we're there for players in whatever environment, whether we're a recreational swimming coach or whether we're a high performance working in the first team in the Premier League, we're there for players. And we're there to serve, you know, coaches are there to serve players, basically. So if it's all about the coach and there's only one way to do it, I'm probably thinking that's not so clever. And then, of course, there's all the social issues around, you know, that exist in the world today that come into the coaching world, because it's coaching is a big part of society. So, you know, non-inclusive environments, I can't stand, as you would, you know, all of the sort of things that you would expect.
Yeah, and then just on that, you know, you talk there about being there for the players, serving the players. Now, club that you're working quite closely with right now, obviously Chelsea.
Yeah,
I've got a massive history of, I guess, doing just that and producing, you know, bringing players through to, I guess, go from the youth development system into now becoming professional footballers. How would you describe the environment down at Cobham, and what would you say the key ingredients that are, I guess, there as part of that recipe to year on year produce players at the highest level?
Well, they have an amazing leader in the academy there, who is Neil Barth, who is incredibly development minded, is incredibly empathic with the children and the parents and the coaches, and incredibly developmentally orientated. Doesn't mean, like everywhere else, they're not really committed to winning, but it's kept in the right context, and you know, the consequences of winning and losing are developmental. So, and you know, like everything else, leadership is the key there.
And what would you say, you know, that you've observed from Neil in that respect, that I guess put him in a position to be a great leader?
I know Neil's background was working, you know, outside the academy, working in the leisure industry.
Yeah.
So had a high level of management and leadership ability before he came into the football academy 17, 18 years ago, I believe. I mean, I don't know that much about this, but you know, it certainly shows in the way he manages and leads the team, and the culture with which he creates for the coaches. I say this generally because I go to quite a few clubs with the Premier League work, and this applies to not only Cobham but also the other clubs that I go to. The care for the kids is immense. You know, what I see in football is so good. And it was, you know, particularly irritating for me during the lockdown. I saw an article about Bayern Munich not going to bring in young kids into their program, and everybody jumping on that bandwagon of, isn't this great that they're not doing this with kids so young? But if you saw the Marcus Rashford interview on television this morning, about how he talked about how his mum struggled to feed him when he was a young boy, and how Manchester United took him in earlier and provided him with that support framework. For me, that's the other side of the coin. I think the way in which, not just Cobham, but the other academies that I go to, the way in which they care for the kids, provide a structure and a framework, is really admirable.
Yeah, and then, you know, just on that, then what would you say are some of the key things that you've observed in players now that would separate those that have gone on to be successful and maybe those that have maybe just fallen short slightly?
Well, I think that, you know, the when you're sort of thinking about going on to be successful, I assume you're talking about graduating from academy into first team football.
Precisely.
You know, there are many other definitions of it, but that's a clear one. I think the modern day footballer, he has to have a strong degree of all four performance elements: his mentality, his physical, his technique, and his tactical understanding. You know, it's quite interesting. It's a good debate, this one, because people often say, yeah, at the top of the game, it's 80% mental. Well, it's 80% mental because you've got the foundation of the other things. You know, you can't be a real top footballer with no ability, but just a great attitude. You can do quite well, but the top ones, you have to have everything. So you have to have a real good attitude to learn well when you're young. You have to be open to advice. You have to have a bit of self-confidence. You have to have some natural athleticism. Again, top sport is played so quickly and so fast. You know, there is a natural athleticism that's in there. Doesn't mean that an average athlete can't train like hell and become physically quite good. But it's a real combination of everything. And I suppose the best answer is if you have a big chunk missing, you're not going to get through.
And just, you know, moving forward onto yourself as
Simon Jones, someone who's coached development, but you've had a long-standing background in the tennis industry, and now you're moving into, you know, you've now got more of a foothold in the football industry in particular. What would you say is the thing that's, I guess, kept you motivated and, I guess, inspired to always be at your best? And, you know, what would you say those motivating factors are? And is there any tangible things that maybe some of the coaches or listeners can take away and maybe try and apply within their own context? And I think I've got an idea that you may say something along the lines of, you know, it's about being passionate and finding out the reason why you're going to do what you're doing and really having a real affinity to that. It would just be interesting to hear your thoughts on that. Anyway,
yeah, I mean, you kind of got the answer, really. I mean, I think there is an expression, you know, instead of finding something to do that you're passionate about, be passionate about what you do.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, I'm a believer in, you know, when I work with players, I tell them this is it's really a matter of choice. It's a decision. You know, you can make a decision to be passionate about something, actually. And I'm very passionate about trying to help coaches coach better.
Yeah.
Basically, I've lived it all my life and I'm very passionate about it. And is it easy? No, it's not easy. It's frustrating at times. Everything's frustrating. I'm frustrating because sometimes I don't hit the mark. Sometimes I don't get it right. I don't help the individual the way I wanted to, thought I was doing it right and didn't. But, you know, I'm really passionate about trying to see others be successful, actually. You know, in tennis, I had some good, I've got some medals and some things, which I'm quite proud of, and they sit in, sit in my toilet.
I doubt it.
but I'm quite... Yeah, I'm quite happy. You know, I'm quite passionate about seeing the coaches that I work with be successful.
Definitely, I think that's it. I think fundamentally, I think it is about being passionate about whatever you do. And I think what I hope really get listeners to understand through the course of these podcasts and these episodes that we're putting out is that there is many ways in which you can have a career within the football industry, and I think a lot of people are very narrow focused down the idea of, okay, I want to be a coach. But over time, hopefully, you'll start to see with insights from different people that we're going to get on, including yourself and other people like you, that there's actually different pathways within the game. And just having a bit more of an open mind and actually, you know, you never know, you might have a passion in another industry that can be transferable in the football industry.
Yeah.
You know, like, similar to yourself, I feel where I started my journey was a lot more focused around, actually, I want to become a football coach, I want to do this, I want to do that. I think I've now shifted to, actually, I just want to help people get better.
Yeah.
And I think it's understanding, you know, coming back to right at the top of this discussion when you talked about asking those questions, the where the questions, the what questions, the why questions, and really trying to get a deeper understanding and clarity around what's actually happening here as a process. I think it's fundamental to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely, you know, to live your life with passion is one of the best things that you can do.
Yeah.
You know, I've said it before in this conversation, you're very lucky in football. It's a tremendous thing to be involved in. And especially in, you know, this country where there's lots of resources with lots of clubs and, you know, big organizations that help. I would encourage coaches to see the positive side of that. And also see the idea that they're, you know, you're as a coach, you're first and foremost an inspirational leader of young people. You know, you're, which is in the talent development world, not so much a coach, you know, not so much a football coach. You're an inspirational leader of young people. And you guys, everybody listening on this call can do amazing things for kids out there. They won't see it. They won't often see it, but they can have a tremendous influence on young people's lives.
And I think ultimately those young people, were, you know, when they do grow up, they will remember those things.
They will. They will. And just sometimes they'll write a letter. You know, just very rarely they'll look up their old coach and they'll drop them a note. And that's just amazingly rewarding. but very often, but most of the times not. Mm. But it will remember their coaches.
Yeah, just as we're definitely, you know, winding down this, it's like we like to keep it real on this podcast. So, like, you've spoken about a lot of the benefits that you do bring to coaching, but I'm sure you've seen some stuff that you are not best appeased by. So, like, what is, like, the bugbears that you see in coaching that you've been now involved in coaching for 30 plus years? If you were to just turn the time back and talk to a young Simon Jones just starting off as he's still in his tennis playing career, what would you tell them?
Easy answer. Easy. Mm. I'd tell him to ask people, ask more, get people's opinions more. When you're a young coach coming through, it's very difficult to ask to get feedback because you're insecure about your ideas. You're finding your way. You're not sure. It's a little bit competitive. You want to be seen to be a knowledge or in some way or form. Just ask. I wish I'd asked a lot more when I was younger. I would have learned a lot more, a lot quicker.
Definitely. And just 30 odd years or 30 plus years, rather, maybe even coming close to 40 years in the coaching industry now.
Careful.
I'm just going, I think Ben remembers from the start of his coaching journey as well. But what's next? What is next for Simon Jones? You know, you've gone from working in tennis, having a bit of a career as a player, moving into coaching, and then now, you know, transitioning over the years now into football, and you've got a bit of a foothold in the football industry and working alongside doing work for the Premier League. What's next for you?
Well, I'm particularly keen to do what I'm doing better.
Okay.
And to improve. I'm not coming into this thing thinking of all of these years I've cracked it. So I'm doing quite a lot of research and study myself on seeing what best practice is and getting feedback and trying to find ways in which I can do this better.
Yeah.
One of the ways in which I'm doing that and will do a little bit more is to try and venture into areas outside my comfort zone, which will be really outside of the sporting environment. So just, trying to work, do a little bit of, get a little bit of experience in perhaps education or business to just see, to test myself, actually. I mean, sport is my great passion. I think there are areas to test myself in like that. But I'm particularly keen to do this really, really well. And, you know, if somebody entrusts their time with me, I want to know that I'm giving them the best possible support that I can do. It's a constant learning journey for me, that one. I don't have any aspirations to, turn from the interpreter into the manager, or anything like that. That's not worth
the stress, is it?
That's not worth. Well, it's worth millions, but no, I'm joking. I'm not comparing myself to Jose. That's not what I'm after. At this moment in time, I'm very passionate about what I'm doing and can see that the better I do it, the better the coaches can be and the better the players can be. And that's something I'm very focused on trying to improve all the time.
Fantastic. And just another final one then. You know, if you had 60 seconds now to kind of wrap it up, one golden nugget for our listeners to kind of take away and maybe apply in their own practice, in their own context, what would that be?
Well, I think that, you know, having spoken on this, I'd say really understand your own beliefs, work on your critical thinking skills, and ask a lot of people. Be open to learning. Know that, you know, great learners are curious people, and with curiosity comes vulnerability. And I know if any coaches are out there that are, you know, pretty established and senior coaches, and they've got a really good position in the game, it's harder to be vulnerable and curious, but I would encourage them to ask a lot and keep learning.
Fantastic. Simon, I just want to say, you know, thank you again. It's been a very, very enjoyable conversation with you today. I've certainly taken away a lot from it myself. Definitely. I'm sure Ben and the listeners will have too. Some great insights, plenty of golden nuggets for, you know, everyone to take away and apply there. I just want to say thanks again for, you know, being available for us to kind of be on the show. And Simon, I'm not sure if you've got any social media handles or in which some of the listeners could get in touch with you should they need to or want to.
Well, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm also on Twitter. I don't do much, but I'm on Twitter and my handle is SI10S.
Right. So if you see any of those tweets, I think Simon's a secret tweeter. look out for those tweets and then check out that Twitter.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.